In the air of Tehran, the scent of spring blossoms, carbon monoxide, and the perfumes and poisons of the tales of 1001 nights sway on top of each other. They whisper together. The city drifts in time. In front of the main entrance of Tehran University, on Liberty Street, a crowd of students is gathered in political protest. With their fists raised, they shout, "Debt to captivity!" Across the street, members of the Party of God, with clenched fists and perhaps chains and brass knuckles in their pockets, shout, "Debt to the liberal!" The anti-riot police, armed with the most sophisticated paraphernalia, including stun batons purchased from the West, stand facing the students. Both groups try, before they come to blows, to triumph over their opponents by shouting even louder. Drops of sweat ooze from faces and specks of spit spew from mouths. Fists, before pounding on heads, rise without miracle toward the sky.
It is perhaps because of these fists that from the sacred sky of Iran no miracle ever descends. Since 101 years ago, when the first revolution for democracy triumphed in Iran, fists similar to these have risen toward the sky of a country with the greatest number of holy men, with the most prayers, tears, and religious lamentations. And today, I believe, the greatest pleas to God for speeding up the day of resurrection rise from Iran.
A short distance away, on the sidewalk, with her back to the steel fence lodged in the 3-foot-tall stone wall surrounding Tehran University, stands a girl who, unlike most girls in the world, but like most girls in Iran, is wearing a black headscarf and a long black coat as a coverall. She possesses a beauty common to all girls in love stories, a beauty that many girls around the world and in Iran who read these stories want to possess. If the ghosts of the thousands of poets who died 1,000 years ago, 700 years ago, or 400 years ago, and the spirit of those yet to be born, who, unlike the living, in the democracy of death, amicably and tolerantly, wander the streets of Tehran, see her large black eyes, they will liken them, as is customary of their poetry, to the sad eyes of a gazelle. An old simile for a pair of oriental eyes that stole Lord Byron's heart, and Arthur Rimbaud's, too. But contrary to this cliched simile, there is a mysterious look in this girl's eyes. It is as if they possess the power to traverse time, the power to pass through the golden walls of harems or perhaps the firewalls of websites and internet filters. But the girl does not know that in precisely 7 minutes and 7 seconds, at the height of the clash between the students, the police, and the members of the Party of God, in the chaos of attacks and escapes, she will be knocked into with great force. She will fall back. Her head will hit against the cement edge, and her sad oriental eyes will forever close.
The girl attracts the attention of mysterious people who, during political demonstrations in Iran, monitor the scene from discreet corners and identify people. They point her out to one another. One of them, from a very professional angle, takes a photograph and films her. I know.
This girl is not a member of any political party, but she is timidly holding a sign that reads, "Debt to freedom, debt to captivity."
It is a strange slogan that I don't believe has ever been seen or heard under the rule of any dictatorial, communist, populist, or even so-called liberal regime. And I don't believe it will ever be heard under the rule of any future regimes that for now remain nameless. When they pause to catch their breath in between shouting their slogans, the students seeking freedom and democracy point to the girl and her sign and ask, "Who in the world is she? What is she trying to say?" The more experienced students, old hands at political protests, respond, "Completely ignore her.
She's an infiltrator. The party of God has paid her to create distrust and division among us. To diffuse the conspiracy, just act as though she doesn't exist.
On the opposite side, the fanatic members of the party of God also point to the girl and ask, "What's that prissy girl trying to say over there?" They hear from their leaders, "The lewd hussy is one of those communists who have recently come back to life. Their big brother in Russia is gaining strength again." But the pathetic slobs only have a handful of members in their party. This is how they hope to attract attention. Just ignore her. Act as though she doesn't exist. With their wireless radios, the secret police pass along the girl's location and ask, "What does this mean? We have no instructions for such cases. What should we do with her?" And they receive instructions.
"Watch her with extreme vigilance and caution. This is most definitely a new conspiracy and a new plot for a velvet revolution orchestrated by American imperialism. Keep her under surveillance, but do not let her suspect anything. Let her think she doesn't exist."